Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
Honestly, dude, fuck you. Seriously. I am so tired of this bullshit. Like, look, we want to give our listeners interviews anytime we can get them. We love doing them, especially books that we really like. But, like, one time, can I call dibs on a book that I'm, like, beyond excited about and then not get cucked later on? It's almost like you're doing this on purpose. Like, you're reaching out to AWA. Look, I love Nahuel. Congrats to him on his promotion. Always love catching up with him. But did you, like, DM him or anybody else at AWA? Because I know you got your people over there. Be like, hey, listen, Nick called dibs on Little Black Book. But you know what? I don't want him to be able to talk about it. I can't fucking wait. So can we get the creators on? Did you do something behind my back?
It's because you're a snake, Nicholas.
Oh, fuck
I told you.
You
this from day one. You're a snake, and this is karma. And I am an early birthday present to me, because when this book drops, it will be my birthday. And, of course, that book is Little Black Book from AWA Studios. And, again, we can't do a fireside chat anymore without having multiple creators on at a time. So I am thrilled and pleased as punch to welcome Jeff McComsey and Felipe Cunha to our show. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
That was quite the intro, Nicholas.
Yeah, well, yeah, this you guys, it's we don't usually get that colorful unless, you know, multi-time guest. So we're going to have to have you on again. I'm all wired. I got to come down from this a little bit. So as Joe mentioned, for those of you who don't know, if you haven't already gone and pre-ordered it, put it on your pull list, you can pick up the first issue of Little Black Book on Doc's birthday. That is the 13th of March. Also, the FOC for issue 2 is actually ahead of this first issue. You guys have already heard me talk about it, listeners. You know that I love this first issue. Joe has also read it because he's an asshole. He also loved it. We've also read the second issue, and the second issue is just as good as the first, if not better. The ending of the first issue is great. The ending of the second issue, I was blown away. Did not see that coming at all. So don't wait. You're listening to this. The FOC is, depending on the distributor that your place uses, it's either the 10th of March or the 11th of March. So make sure, once you're done listening to this, call up your local comic shop. Let them know you also want Little Black Book issue 2. So that way you make sure you get that. Don't fuck around with this. Joe, hit us with a synopsis before we actually let these guys talk.
Okay. Yeah. It might be 30 minutes before they get a word in. With where you're going, Nicholas. Synopsis. In this explosive new thriller by writer Jeff McComsey. Now, am I saying your last name correctly, Jeff?
Yeah, you got it. You got it. I pronounce it with a P in it for some reason, but you're saying it right. You're good. I didn't realize I was doing this until I went to pick up a pizza once, and it was McComsey. I was like, that's how I pronounce it. That's bad. No, you're right. You got it. You're good.
Okay. Who has written a few AWA books prior to this that I've loved.
Yeah. Right,
Kentucky and The Fourth Man. Love both those books. And artist Felipe Cunha, who I pronounced more correctly than Nicholas.
You're winning.
Please don't do that to me. Come on.
So Cole, a straight arrow handyman, finds himself in the crosshairs of a ruthless crime syndicate along with his pregnant wife. But what is the meaning of the Little Black Book? An underworld contacts Cole's deceased father had hidden in his home. Cole's deceased father believed that the best thing he could do for his son was to stay out of his life. But does the apple fall far from the tree? Man, so right off the rip, you know, what I'll say about this is getting a chance to read both the first two issues was an absolute treat. But the entire setup in this first issue with the main character, you know, Cole, you meet Cole and his wife just sitting around thinking of children's kids' names. And the wife just slapping him down every name that he comes with is absolutely fantastic. Nick doesn't know what that's like. I do.
Kids, you kind of stop and think, you come up with a name and you're like, is there anybody with that name that I hate? And then if you don't, they go on the maybe list is basically how that goes.
Right. It was basically like, okay, ex-girlfriends, those names were out. Ex-boyfriends for my wife, those names were out.
Definitely right.
And then it all goes from there. But I love the way that this book, you know, was introduced, and then reading the synopsis, obviously, you know, pulls you right in. Where did this idea, Jeff, come from?
Well, I guess the first thing that sort of that really started the idea going was the idea of like inheritance and things that we sort of get from our fathers. And I like the idea of, you know, sort of a son that was nothing like his father, but inherits something from him. And it sort of starts him on that path. Is he going to be like his father? Is he going to stay who he is? I just like that idea of these things that we sort of inherit from our fathers. You know, it's stuff sometimes. It's genetic stuff sometimes. It's, you know, like a penchant for cussing or something. Like, there's all kinds of things that you can inherit from your father. But with this book, I wanted it to be an actual thing, which actually ended up being a book. So it kind of like represents all of those different things in one shot.
Nice. Wow. And Felipe, when did you get brought in on this project?
I excuse me. I started drawing it. I think it was last year, middle of last year. But the story was kind of already in the works. I was brought in with a synopsis, with a rough synopsis that changed later on a little bit. But it was something that was going on already. I was brought in as something that was being developed at AWA. I was talking to Axel and Michael about doing something after Gatsby. We weren't quite sure yet what would that would be. And then Michael came along with the synopsis, and I said, I'm in.
Yeah, it's awesome. I like, as soon as I heard it, when Axel told us about it, I think we had Michael on the show with him as well. That's when I was like, I need this. Like, I'm not letting Joe steal this book from me. And then he didn't want to let that happen either. And then as we're reading both of these first two issues, Joe and I have been lucky enough to get a look at those two early. Like, it feels like the readers, you know, we get a chance to get our footing, but then things move at like a breakneck pace once you get going, like in both of these issues. And I'm curious, Jeff, for you, was that how the story kind of came to you? It was just like everything was kind of flowing out quickly, and that's why you ended up writing it in such a way? Or did you have to be like, was that more of a deliberate choice on your end after you gathered your thoughts together?
Well, I think normally with the synopsis, usually there's a point where, you know, Axel and Mike and I are just kind of working around the idea. And, you know, for things that are sort of outside of my control, they're like, look, yeah, we're going to pitch this as a 4-issue miniseries. I'm like, cool, that's sort of my billet. I figure it out from there. So now I have, okay, we have 4 issues we have to break this out into. So, you know, and I also think that 4 issues is a good length for this. I think when you do a 4-issue miniseries, generally, you know, there's very little fat on those issues, right? You know what I mean? Like, everything is sort of moving into the conclusion. And I like that. I think it keeps it at a nice pace and makes it for a fun read, actually, out, you know, while you're getting the issues and also when it gets collected, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, that's pretty much AWA's staple, right? 4 or 5 issues. A couple books they've done with Garth, I think, have gone 8. Mm-hmm. But I think what they figured out, and especially that along with the creative teams, is that these stories have been tight, right? Mm-hmm. And able to tell like a full, complete story within, you know, 4 issues and be completely satisfied. I know, you know, when we've had Axel on, you know, a few times and have talked with a lot of other, you know, creators from AWA that, you know, pretty much the writer comes in with the story and then they pair, you know, an artist with the writer. And so, you know, Felipe, what was it like for you working on this book with Jeff? Because I know sometimes like certain writers will have certain artists they have in mind that they want to work with and they've worked with in the past and have had a good working relationship. And there's this sort of like, I just let the artist sort of do his thing and get to work. What was your, you know, relationship working with Jeff? And was there, you know, did you find, you know, that the pacing of this story sort of changed your approach when drawing it?
Yeah, first of all, as many of you may know or not know, but Jeff is also an artist. He's writing the series, but he's an artist as well. So he understands what a structure of the script is interesting for the artist. The amount of references, most of all, it's something that's very useful. It's something that's sometimes falls on the artist to do it, sometimes alone, most of it. But Jeff comes with the script packed with visual references. So that's I think that's the biggest thing.
Ah, nice.
That's the biggest thing because it's makes the process a little bit more comfortable. Because while I do like to do stuff on my own, things on my own, my own references, kind of going crazy on my own. I like to be certain what the writer wants to see. So when that comes and so clearly as it does with JavaScripts, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And that is also something that I talk about briefly. Excuse me?
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But saying that kind of made me think about the fourth man real quick, because I know Mike Diodato Jr. has, has this beautiful ability of when he's drawing his characters to sort of, make them seem like they look like actual people. Like I believe I saw Paul Giamatti.
Bill Paxton, the black cop from Terminator 1. I think he had just passed away when I was writing that. I was like, you know what? He's got to be the guy here.
So is that directed from you to
Mike? No, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So knowing that Mike Diodato likes to work that way, and this was another one like Little Black Book, The Fourth Man is very much, specific places in the United States, right? So like very sort of specific kind of reference, like what these cars look like, what this place looks like when it snows out or all the leaves fall off the trees. So like, instead of having to go back and forth with notes, I just decided like, hey, let's do just, a crazy ass amount of reference. And I think for The Fourth Man, we did a little more just because I think there was a bigger sort of cast to that one. So it's a lot of reference from some of the other characters there. But for me, it was also cool knowing that like I could just cast the coolest movie that'll never get made. I mean, it might get made into a movie someday, but like these actors don't look like this anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
And it's like, Ed Harris in his prime, Let's make him the bad guy, right? So like that stuff was perfect. And Mike was all over that stuff too.
Yeah, it looked like it was a young Jimmy Kahn in there, Paul Giamatti. And it was funny because when we had Cullen Bunn on, he was very like, he didn't want to like, no, it doesn't represent that person at all. But like one of the old snipers was clearly, what's her name there? The old
I can't remember. I know who you're talking about. I don't know the actress though.
Carol Burnett, right? I was like, Mike's doing his thing. And I have not so subtly pitched the idea of having Nick and I drawn and killed by Mike Diodato Jr.
Honestly, if you send him a couple of nice headshots, I think you'd have no problem.
Yeah, there you go. Felipe, by all means, too, if you ever feel compelled to kill Joe or I in a book, too, I'll just volunteer. please don't hold back.
It would be a pleasure.
There we go. Now, I'm curious for both of you, but I want to throw this at you first, Felipe. So your lines are very clean. Like you have a very clean style. And then you're paired with Marco Olesko, who I think has become my favorite colorist in the business. He really won me over with Hit Me, of course, another AWA title, just because there were certain things that he did there that were just like, I feel like I've never seen this in comics. And it was like small things, but it really like won me over. But he have this very clean style. And then we're set in Texas, and it's a place that's like, dusty, like in my mind, right? Because I've been to different parts of Texas. It's like dusty, it can be dingy in certain areas, depending, maybe Lubbock. But like certain parts of it, it's just a little not as clean. And I'm curious for you, when you were talking to him about the colors and everything, I love the like how it's not what I would expect in Texas. Was that like a deliberate choice for you guys?
I mean, I would just say that, it's funny. I love Marco's stuff, and I just actually got my comp copies yesterday. The day before that, and I love them even more in print, right? And as an artist, I can tell you the most frustrating thing is the coloring that you do on the screen versus what you get in your hands from the printer. They are always the same thing, and it takes a really skilled colorist to sort of know what will and won't play in print, and they look even cooler in print. So I was thrilled. And I think just to your question, some of the textures and things that we see in there, I definitely see where Marco added those things in there. And again, it's all about the subtlety, right? It's like the subtlety is the stuff that sort of really, really kicks the stuff off, to me at least.
Yeah, 100%.
Without spoiling things, and this is more of a comment than a question, but there's a panel, Felipe, that you drew in the second issue where we see a gun pointed at a certain character's face, and there's this wry smile that he gives before, there's no longer a smile to be had on said face. But I absolutely loved that little detail, because it was like, as a reader, you're looking and going, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And if I was in that position, I wouldn't be fucking smiling. But it was almost like that character like come to peace before he was getting his brains blown out. How much fun have you had so far drawing this book compared to maybe some of I read Gatsby, absolutely loved Gatsby, completely different book than what we're getting here with Little Black Book. But what about this has been fun for you to draw?
All of it. Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what panel you're talking about immediately when you started talking about it. And I have to give props to Jeff because the little smile is indicated in the script. And when I was working on that page, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, this is going to look so, so wrong, but so right at the same time, because it elicits a reaction, just like it's something that you remembered, right? And for me, when I drew that panel, it's exactly what was going on through my mind. That's when I was already having a lot of fun doing this book, but that might be one of the moments when I realized that this is something special. This is something that's not, it's out of the ordinary. It's something that you might have read something along the lines of the story, but it has something of its own. It has a personality. It has a heart. It's funny. It's scary. It's all of it. So doing this book, I went through all those motions, all those emotions. I mean, and it was very special. About the art style, as you mentioned, my line work, it's more of a crisp kind of clean artwork. It might have been the biggest challenge because this is a very dark story in a lot of places. While we still have a lot of heart, a lot of some laughs here and there, it's still a very dark story. It's a crime story at the end of the day. So it's something that I had to work my creative muscles a little bit more to convey that a little bit more. And that's when the colors really complement what I did. Because I did what I could do to convey that, but the colors really amped that up a lot.
Yeah, honestly, like I wouldn't even think it. Like looking at it, your work and with Marcos, like right now in the first issue, just where things go from lighter to dark, just in terms of setting and daytime, it's like I would think you didn't break a sweat doing it. I would think it was nice and easy for you. It just seems so natural. But, you know, Joe and I think are really enjoying that kind of like juxtaposition of that style. Cause we see it in like Kill Your Darlings from Image as well, where you have like this, some cute and cuddly stuff in there, but it's kind of like a fucked up book. And then with this, where it's, you know, things like you said are getting very dark and also very calculated and hearing that detail about Jeff and his approach, like, you know, mentioning that little smile in the script, that leads me to a question for you, Jeff. With you, like this seems like, you know, we see stories where like, you know, characters are very calculated and everything is like, it's like, you know, like they're playing chess and everybody's playing checkers, right? That kind of situation. But this is one of those books too, where I feel like I'm reading this and it's like the creators, I know you're the ones calling the shots, but like everything seems to matter. Every single detail is so important. And I'm curious for you again, like we're asked about pacing before, as you're going through this, like you're making this move at a fast pace, but making sure that every single bit like that you need to get in there gets in there. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, is that how you've always been with your approach in writing?
Well, generally, yeah. And I would say, you know, when I work with Axel and Michael, you know, we usually do like a really, really, really tight synopsis, sort of an outline for Fourth Man. It was kind of an outline / script because the outline had like maybe 85% of the dialogue. It was just coming to me as I was writing up the outline. But yeah, usually that's sort of how I approach these things. You know, it's all about sort of most of the work I say, and I teach as well. So like, you know, the sort of pre-production stuff, the stuff, everything you do before work actually begins, right? So, you know, all that work on that outline before it's ever going to go in Felipe's hands, before I start the scripts, I make sure those outlines are kind of bulletproof. And, you know, when I give it over to Mike and Axel and it comes back, the notes are always fantastic. I mean, Mike and Axel, you know, absolutely know what they're doing and their advice is always excellent. So I listen, you know, when they tell me stuff, I'm like, all right, that's great. But the other thing too, is I feel like I like working from like a, you know, sort of a two or three page idea that gets them to say yes or no internally. And then we do sort of an outline that does the entire, you know, from the beginning to the end. And I find that when I take that outline and then sit down to break that out into scripts, and I know it's corny, but the characters already have started to kind of talk to me. Like, I've been thinking about it, like the relationships and all this kind of stuff. And then when it comes down to like actually doing the characterizations of these characters, it's there. And that's something that has always, you know, kind of helped me. I know I can't just sit down on a blank screen and start to type up, you know, page one. Like, it just doesn't work that way for me.
Yells at cloud.
Exactly right. And I think the other thing too, what the heck was I going to say? It's gone. So we're talking about outlines. Oh, sorry. No, wait.
Okay. Cause I'm hung up on something else right now. You're a teacher. So
yes.
Do your students ever read your stuff and come back to you?
I should clarify. I teach at an art school. So these are like 19 to 22 year olds. Okay. And I bring my stuff and I'm like, you guys got to read this stuff.
I assumed that you were a high school teacher or something like that. I have a
professorial thing about me. No. So like Felipe mentioned, I think of myself primarily as an artist first. I draw comics that like almost nobody reads, you know, just to cut to the bottom of the deck. But like, that's sort of how I think of myself. So, you know, I teach mostly art stuff at art school, essentially.
So what you were talking about, your characters speak to you, they come to you, you don't just start on a on a blank page. And so having the benefit of being able to read the first two issues, we kind of really see where the direction is going. But there's this book is filled with a lot of not so great guys, you know,
I almost exclusively love writing characters like that. Like, I, you know, like those characterizations come to me and I think, oh, I'm really good at dialogue, but I've never tried to write like, I don't know, like a teenage girl story or something. So it might not be the same thing, but I love those kind of characters. Like, I've always been obsessed with like the goon. Like, it's not the bad guy. It's the guy who works for the bad guy. I feel like they usually represent whatever the movie, the tone of the show or whatever, more so than the actual antagonist does. Like, they're meant to represent all that stuff visually. And so I like to pull those guys out and write stories about them. I think I saw Pulp Fiction at like a really young age. I wasn't that young. I was like 14 or 15. And it just blew my mind that you could like tell stories about these really characters that would generally just be sort of one-offs that get blown away in like act two and you never see them again. But you know, that movie's like, hey, no, these guys have, you know, lives of their own, sort of all that kind of stuff. And I like to throw the fuck word in there a lot too. So that's sort of, you know, there's always certain characters that sort of germane to, although I don't know, maybe teenagers.
Right.
Still might be good.
So yeah. So like, this book is like rife with not so great characters, but we have two characters that appear to be the only, the story's only sort of like glimmer of hope or goodness.
Right.
But you know, we kind of see where things are going. And so the question I have is that when this story has come to its conclusion, will there still be that slight glimmer of goodness, or will all of our character have gone full Breaking Bad?
I'll tell you what, one of my other favorite films is Fargo, and Fargo is about the triumph of decency. And I think that's more or less the theme that sort of goes through Little Black Book. I mean, I would say yes to that answer, that question.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
See where I can find
it. To be honest, too, I feel like this is a good note from like Axel and Mike. I mean, they what I love about working with them is they have this sort of wide angle view of like what works as a comic and B, what can work for this story. And you know, I feel like between the three of us, if the three of us agree on something, then it's good to go. If two of us agree on it, and maybe, you know, if only one of us thinks it's a good idea, then it's probably not a good idea, and it sort of gets worked out there. So you know, between them as sounding boards, it's really a lot of fun.
So then another quick question I have too is that, you know, we meet Cole and Johnny Boy and some of the other characters, but there's Cole's wife, but does she actually have a name? Because there's at one point, quote unquote, Tess, and
her name is actually Tess. Actually.
Okay. All right. Yes, that's okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. I wanted to be, because there's a lot of, hey baby and hey wife. And I was like, did I completely miss the game?
I know, I only call my wife by her first name if like there's something wrong.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, generally speaking, it's always, you know, baby cakes or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. When I say Lauren, she's like, who the fuck are you? Right. Yeah. Every time.
For a fight, she's ready. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Those are the only times that it's okay to do that. 100%. And I'm curious. So, for, you know, Felipe had mentioned before how the little details that you're bringing to the table, Jeff, and you being an artist, how that helps him in your communication. Was there anything because we hear this from creative teams constantly, I feel like, was there anything specifically that Felipe did that I know you're working with Michael and Axel on creating the story, but is there anything that he did that caused you guys to be like, oh shit, like we need to do this a little bit differently because Felipe is doing like a kick-ass job, or he brought something to the table that I just didn't think of?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that per se. I mean, one of the things that I know he does really well is capture likenesses. Like it is far easier said than done when you're drawing characters. You're like, oh, they'll always look the same. We'll make them look the same. But when you're drawing comics, like these characters, their heads go on the panel, go from, you know, this big to this big to this big to this big. And sort of what it takes to keep those characters on model, right? Like they look like the same character, you know, no matter how far we are away from them or all that kind of stuff. Felipe was all over that. Like I believe that like the biggest sort of indicator of like a professional comic artist is consistency.
I think
even if it's a whack, you know, like it could be a crazy ass style, but as long as they're executing it consistently, it reads and it's fun. And you know, Felipe is a very consistent comic artist, and he's just knocked that stuff right out. And I think actually, you know, we were talking earlier about you know, when Felipe was brought into the project. I remember, like, as I finished issue one, it was like, all right, they gave it to Felipe, and then I started issue two. Like, I think, you know, we did a lot of hashing out during sort of the outline phase. And I remember there was sort of like an internal thing where, like, you know, Axel and Mike, you know, have to get projects approved by the creative board. And like, we didn't make the cut once and we came back. And then I'm kind of glad this happened because it was actually kind of a different story then. And then we came back to it with a different sort of angle, and it became what it is. Like the core of like what it was about was the same, but we sort of approached it in different stylistic ways and a couple other things. But just sort of, I think having a lot of that work done on the front end for me made, again, just typing up those issues and getting them out to Felipe, you know, and he was turning them around really quickly too. So that was always a lot of fun. And in fact, the thing I miss most when we finish with these projects is like, I don't get Felipe's pages on Monday morning anymore. Highlight, right? Cause he sent them out early. Like as soon as I get them, I'm like, there they are. So it's always fun stuff, man.
At least you got the physical copy now, but that note about like the consistency, that is such an underrated thing that I think as readers, a lot of people will take for granted. And Joe and I, because we read so much friggin' stuff, like when we catch those kinds of things, like whether we see it like in indie comics or even superhero comics where like maybe a mask doesn't look right, like from one panel to the next or page to page, it's like very much can stand out to us and take us out of a book. So Felipe, I'm curious for anybody that's listening to us, that's like an artist themselves or an aspiring artist. Is that something that came natural to you, or is that something that you kind of had to work on over time?
No, I definitely had to work on that a lot, because it was actually one of the hardest things to accomplish early on when I started out. The very first projects that I did, be it when I first started out as an independent creator, the first published artworks with publishers, it was always something that I had to be mindful of and to sort of develop. And it wasn't always easy, and it wasn't always something that came naturally. And I'm actually glad to see that being talked about. I have to obviously thank Jeff for the nice words, because that's something that makes a difference, because that's something that most people don't realize, because it's actually not meant to be noticed that much.
Exactly.
Because if you notice something's wrong, if the casual reader comes to page 10 and has trouble recognizing which character this is, even though the character was there from page one, something's wrong. So if the casual reader doesn't if the casual reader doesn't notice that, then it's I did something right. So it's something that it's nice to be noticed, but it's perfectly fine if it is not noticed. So either way, it means that something is going right, and the work that I put on that is working out, because it's something that's intentional. It's something that I developed, and it wasn't always easy. It's something that came much later on in my career, and it's more something more present in more recent projects. So It's nice that it is that way right now.
Oh, Jeff, make sure you have your students listen to that one bit from Felipe, if nothing else. Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of the takeaways I took, you know, from reading the first two issues. One is that, you know, and again, you, you know, we've gotten this with The Fourth Man and Grendel, Kentucky. Like when you write these really sort of gritty stories, but there's always a little bit of levity in there. There's some great humor in there. And like I said in the beginning, when they're talking about baby names and we meet Melvin and he goes, "How about Melvin?" No, we're not naming the baby.
Who would suggest that?
It was great. Cole would. And I love Cole, right?
He's good. What's crazy? My wife has her father comes from a large family, and there's a Marvin, a Melvin, and an Edwin in that family.
So wow. Where
that from? Yeah.
Nice.
Tremendous.
Wow. Dakota is a boy's name. I know. I actually played with a guy in high school. His name was Dakota Rabbit. I'm not kidding.
What a name.
He was fast as hell.
I had worked on a project like, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. And I remember getting in an argument with a guy about that name. And it just always stuck in my craw. So I'm like, I'm putting that in here this time. About whether or not it was a boy or girl's name. And I was like, that's it.
That's Paul for sure.
Right. But I love that. How the because it's quite the juxtaposition with how that book starts and how it ends. Right. And between the first issue and the second issue, both end with these sort of, you know, what the fuck kind of cliffhanger kind of moments. And, you know, so like while the first issue I thought was a lot more emotionally heavy, mm-hmm. while the second issue was a bit more violent and vicious. Right. You've set a pretty dark tone right off, you know, the bat. Is that sort of the tone that we can expect, you know, for the remainder of the series, or is it going to get even ratcheted up even more?
I think it does get ratcheted up a little bit more. It's definitely got a crescendo, right, before it can come back down. So yeah, most definitely. Again, another big thing about outlining is being able to figure out, because they're not broken down into issues in that initial outline. You have the ability then to say, this is the best part to end. This is where we end issue two. This is where we end issue one. You can pick and choose, right? Like, you know, do we add that to the front of next issue, or is this where we end? You get to make those little decisions, you know, in a way that you wouldn't if you were just doing like, you know, again, I know comics aren't made this way anymore, but you know, when it was just a monthly thing, it's like, hey, this has got to get out. Deadlines, you know, and you're just doing monthly books and just, you know, flying by the seat of your pants. You know, I actually get to kind of sit down and really break it out before we kind of commit to it.
Yeah, that sequence at the end of the first issue.
That's my favorite scene, too. That whole scene is probably my favorite scene in the book. Like, I love a lot of stuff past that, but that's one of my favorites.
I mean, that was fucking brilliant. I mean, I didn't see, you know, what happened at the end of the second issue like that. Like, it was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. But, like, the way the first issue ends was just, like, this perfectly, like, snapshot. Boom, 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 boom. And there's almost no dialogue in it. Mm-hmm. But he's just like, oh man, like it really brings the room together, dude.
You know? So. You know, and as an artist writer, I feel like that's the one thing that helps inform my writing is the understanding of like, this is a text and a visual medium, right? And they're always usually on this page together, but there's sort of a rhythm to it. And sometimes you want to dial back the dialogue, the words that are on the page, and let the images come through. And then other scenes, you want to do the opposite. And sort of knowing when that is. And, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to have a panel that just has a one word balloon on it. That's one of my favorite things to do. It happens like maybe three or four times in a book. And I'm like, every time. I just feel like it carries so much sort of... Because I feel that, you know, sometimes I read stuff and occasionally I feel like I can tell that the writer felt like they had to have something in this sequence or in this panel for whatever reason, right? Like I'm perfectly comfortable if there's a scene with no dialogue. Like, okay, this is the part where, you know, Felipe is going to carry it right here and just be very clear about what that is until it moves us to like a more character dialogue driven scene or something like that. But just knowing that, you know, these books, you know, when they're the best is when they have both of those, you know, like a nice balance of those.
Yeah, and that was executed, I thought, brilliantly at the end of that first issue. And I was talking to Nick about this because I read The Last Mermaid this week, written and drawn by Derek Kirk Kim, and I'm not familiar with their work at all, but it was such a beautiful book to sort of look at, and there was like panel after panel after panel where there weren't words. The art is just driving the story, and the suspense was up here during that whole time, and I love that. Because sometimes, you know, books can get bogged down with either narration or too much dialogue in it. And it takes you away from the art and the story, really, that's sort of going on. And so when something like that happens, I'm always blown away by that because it's such a great way of storytelling without, you know, actually saying anything. And just that sequence on those last, you know, those last several panels, it's like, Fuck. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The close of that first issue is like, if for those of you who haven't read it yet, like if that doesn't suck you in, I don't know what's gonna. And then you get the end of the second issue. It's like, Jesus. But you know, on the note too, of like just having the just letting Felipe and Marco tell the story, there's a lot of like setting type shots where it's just that. And it's just like,
Felipe annihilated those. Those are again also some of my favorite shots, because Arizona is a big, West Texas and Arizona are a big part of the story. And I think maybe half of it is outside, I think. You know what I mean? So like those backgrounds and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Felipe did a great job on those. And then Marco sort of came in and knocked him out of the park with sort of like, you know, gave us time of day and sort of all that ambiance. It's good stuff.
Yeah, Jeff, you kind of already answered the question I was going to ask you about. What was the favorite thing that you got from Felipe, what he brought to life? Felipe, I know Joe asked you already about, like, you know, how you're enjoying the experience of with this story and bringing it to life. But I'm curious, is there a specific panel that you've brought to life so far that you, like, are particularly proud of above all else? Ones that we have seen or haven't seen?
Yeah, I think that my favorite thing overall, not just one panel or one page, I think is page 8 of the first issue, where we first have a glimpse of the little black book opened, where you see all the names.
That's awesome.
That was really
cool. Love that page, because we had a back and forth with that page to make sure it looked right. The reference that Jeff brought was, I think it was an address book from, who was it?
Miles Davis Jr. I think it was. No, Sammy Davis Jr. It was Sammy Davis
Sammy
Jr.
Davis Jr. Yeah.
They'd taken a picture of his little black book open, and I found that and sent that to Felipe, and he worked on top of that. And then Mike Coast got, he's like, we can't have actual phone numbers in here. So we had to sort of, you know, we figure those a little bit. So like, they still look like, you know, I think maybe it says Las Vegas or something where it's open, make sure those numbers sort of jive with those area codes and stuff. But yeah, no, that nice. Page is the bomb.
I like that detail on the area codes.
I don't think cleaners actually means cleaning people, guys.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, no, that was, again, that was another great, and that's the other thing too that I think readers will enjoy when they're flipping through, you know, especially this first issue, is the sequencing of everything is just so well done. And there's a little, like, little flash forward, a little flash forward, and when everything sort of comes full circle. And also, who hasn't been where the, you know, they've been like fucking A, and they're taking off a chunk of the drywall because there's been a leak. I know I've done that recently. So I was like, God damn it.
I had an actual leak in my house probably 2 months before we pitched that book, and it just stuck there. And I'm like, that's going in there too.
Yeah. Same with me, right? So it's all too familiar. And it's just like you're cursing the person that lived in the house before you fucked it up, you know, and all that. But like, so we've talked sort of about Cole and Tess as sort of our two, you know, the characters that you meet sort of right off the bat, and I would call them the story's you know protagonists. But we meet some other, you know, colorful characters, especially in the second issue, Cupcake specifically.
I love Cupcake.
Yeah, like I look at Cupcake and I go, that's a sociopath, right? So Felipe, you said you love Cupcake. Maybe tell us a little bit more why you love Cupcake, and then Jeff, like, you know, for you in this story, who is, you know, character that you've really enjoyed writing and are looking forward for people to get to know a little bit more?
Yeah, Cupcake, I think it's my favorite. Because I read the name first, and afterward I saw who that was. And I was laughing by my own, right? when I got the reference file for the character, right? The actor, the vibe of the person. And when you are in a room with those big huge guys saying that Cupcake wants to talk to you, then you flip the page, it's this small guy, nerdy looking.
Yeah, it's not even like, hey, it's Tiny who's this big hulking dude. It's like, no, like,
that's Cupcake. Yeah.
I can't remember if I put it in the script or not, but I thought it was like, I just, as I was writing, I was like, they call him Cupcake because they all went to school together, and like his mom brought him cupcakes in 10th grade or something for his birthday, and they never fucking let him forget about it, and that was it. I don't know if it's in issue 2 or not, but there's a scene where somebody, Cupcake, calls somebody, and we see what Cupcake's picture looks like on the phone when his name comes up. It's good stuff. I think that might be an issue three, actually. I don't think that's it, too, but it's good stuff. I just love Felipe nailed that one because, you know, it's like an iPhone. You know, there's like a party picture of Cupcake or something. It's
perfect. People actually, don't forget.
I love
My favorite, I mentioned that last scene, that there's a page, I think it's technically a splash page. For some reason, as an artist, I always hated splash pages, so as a writer, I always make sure I add another panel to them. So usually it's like big panel with a little inset. But it's the one where it's Cupcake and one of these, you know, these shit kickers is what we call them in the script. And there's a car on fire, and they're watching it burn, and Cupcake's like, do these things ever explode? And the guy just says sometimes.
Again,
that's a one word dialogue balloon. I love that. It was probably my favorite page in that one. I don't want to say anything else about that scene, but that was my favorite part.
Oh yeah, that was good. That was really fucking good. Yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights of this whole thing. Man, it's some awesome stuff from these first two issue guys, and then we got two more that Joe and I are waiting on. Although I think Nawal told us that you guys have all four issues done already.
Oh yeah, it's been done for a little bit, and that's another thing. AWA is really solid about is like they don't screw around with that. Like when the books are done before they go off, usually they won't send off number one until especially with my four issue series books. So they're always wrapped up. So there's never that, you know, like, oh no, I'm gonna get hit by a bus or something. We'll never find out what happens. Like you don't have that. So
nice. Yeah. Okay, good. So just a quick reminder to everybody, the FOC for the second issue is ahead of the first issue release. The first issue release is on Doc's birthday, the upcoming 13th. Make sure you go to your local give your local comic shop a call. Let them know, hey, I want the second issue on my pull list. Joe and I have read both, loved them both. Want to make sure you guys are all aware of that now. Before we let you guys go, We tend to do with new creators that we have, new creators to us on the show, we'd like to ask what you've been reading lately. I'm going to throw it at you first, Jeff. It doesn't have to be comics. It can be anything.
Honestly, a lot of it, I haven't been into the comic shop recently. So I haven't got my pull list recently. So I've mostly been sort of pouring through. I've been working on a World War II story just for fun. And I've been reading Blazing Combat, which is a collection from 1968. Blazing Combat was an E.C. Warren book that came out like years and years and years ago. It's just like, and again, I won't bore you guys with a bunch of these, you know, these artists have moved on to the other coil. But these are just guys that I've always really enjoyed. And again, like we talked about earlier, it's that consistency of style. And these guys, you know, at the point in their careers when they did Blazing Combat, they were like, you know, probably in their late 40s, 50s and early 60s. Like these were like pros that had been doing this for a long time and were still at the top of their game. And they're just, if you like, you know, old black and white World War II stories, they are exquisite. And this is the one that's kind of got me obsessed at the moment.
Nice. And what about you, Felipe?
Yeah, for me, I have this interesting relationship with comics where I don't read a lot of comics.
Like, you know, when you draw them, it's like, oh, I got to read them too. You know what I mean? Like, God.
That's fair. Especially I would just think being busy, but there's also just maybe you don't want to. I get it.
Yeah, but it's something different. It's something that I remember seeing a lot of when I was growing up in the 90s with the Wizard magazine. We had a publication here during a lot of the mid 90s, I think. And I was reading a lot of the interviews with the artists and creators where they would say things like, I don't read a lot of comics because I'm working on them, and it's kind of, I don't have the immersion that I have that I had when I was just a reader, when I was just a fan. Right now, as a professional, I get too much distracted by the technicalities of the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, and it's something that happens to me.
Sure.
It's something that happens to me. And I think I remember seeing that back then and thinking, that's lame. I love comics. I'm gonna keep reading my whole life, but I saw it happen to me.
When I need my batteries restored, like that's when I dive back into everything. And it's like, it's very immersive, right? Like I'm just like binging on these things. And then it just kind of filled me back up, and then I can go back to work. But yeah, like I was saying, like, you know, as being an artist, drawing comics is so labor intensive. It takes so long that you develop a strange relationship with comics while you're doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's certainly, you know, a love hate relationship to a certain extent. You know, clearly it's love because you're dedicating, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours to it, but you know, it's tough sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you what, we love the work that you guys are putting out between
Gadget. Honestly, this stuff makes it worth it. I love this. I love hearing this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, of course. And just a quick reminder for everybody, too. I know, Joe, you talked about Grendel Kentucky on the show. We both read The Fourth Man. You also talked about Gatsby on the show as well. Books from these guys. Make sure you go check them out at your local comic shop. If they don't have it, let them know that you want it. It's all in collect edition. You can go and binge these while you're waiting for the second issue.
They're pretty inexpensive, too.
Yeah, there you go. While you're waiting for the second issue of Little Black Book, again, go let your local comic shop know that you want them to order that for you, and then pick up the first issue. You guys are going to really enjoy it. Jeff, Felipe, I really appreciate you taking the time. It was great chatting with you guys.
Same. Nice to meet you guys. It was good to meet you in real life, Felipe.
You too, Jeff.
Yeah, we've only been email buddies before now.
Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.